For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
It's the SNL Hall of Fame podcast with chief conversationalist Bill Kenny, featuring Matt Ardill, with special guest Kalina Steckel, and now curator of the hall, your host JD.
Thank you so much, Kirk Lane. It is a fantastic day to be inside the SNL Hall of Fame, and I want to welcome you. My name is JD, and it is great to have you here. Now, come on inside. Whoa, 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 whoa. Have you listened to this show before? Wipe those feet. The SNL Hall of Fame podcast is a weekly affair where each episode we take a deep dive into the career of a former cast member, host, musical guest, or writer, and add them to the ballot for your consideration. Once the nominees have been announced, we turn to you, the listener, to help decide who will be enshrined for perpetuity inside the hall. And that's how we play the game. It's just that simple. Let's meet the players, though, shall we? We've got Matt Ardill in the trivia corner, Matt's Minutia Minute. We have got chief conversationalist Bill Kenny downstairs, likely sitting in his lazy boy. And then we've got a special guest. And that special guest, as you heard off the top, is Kalina Steckel. She's been on the show before. She's a friend of the show. And we're looking really forward to hearing her conversation with Mr. Kenny. Now let's stroll, shall we? Okay, one of my favorite SNL moments of all time is, I'm not sure what season it is, but it's the Sandler, Spade, Farley era, and they're doing, and Mike Myers is there as well, because they're doing a New Kids on the Block parody. And I'm just thinking about this because I'm walking down the hallway and one of them rhymes, "I'm walking, I'm talking, Macaulay Culkin." And it's just so funny to me. Oh, Matt, is that funny to you?
That is funny to me too. Yeah. Anytime you can rhyme Macaulay Culkin with something, I am
right.
Humbled.
Yeah. Absolutely. Let's talk about Josh Brolin, my friend.
Yes. Thanos himself, 5'10", born February 12th, 1968, in Santa Monica to actor James Brolin and casting director Jane Cameron. His stepmother is Barbara Streisand. So dads. I mean, that's got to be an interesting childhood growing up with a stepmom. Barbara Streisand. He attended Santa Barbara High School, spending much of his time surfing with friends in a basically a surf gang called the Seco Rats.
Gang?
He was a surf punk gang member. He was a punk and got up to no good. This impacted his entire life, actually. Two of his current hobbies remain racing cars and surfing. Basically, he was born to be in Point Break. That's what it boils down to. He is such a fan of car racing. He is such a fan of race driving. He won the 24th annual Toyota Pro Celebrity Race in Long Beach in April of 2000. This is the same race his father won 22 years earlier.
That's great.
He raced Yeah, it's crazy. It's bonkers. But the list of people he raced against is just as bonkers. George Lucas, John Elway, Ashley Judd, Melissa Joan Hart, and Allison Hannigan.
Oh, I could have beat those five.
I don't know. George Lucas is a huge fan of driving fast and used to be a street racer. So
okay, maybe
I could see George Lucas putting up a good fight there, because I mean, American Graffiti is all basically all about him driving fast and almost getting killed as a kid.
And to be fair, it's George Lucas. I'd let him win.
Yeah, yeah, I would have a hard time. Now Josh had a rough youth. He was regularly getting into trouble for stealing cars. He had an addiction to drugs as a teen, and has said that many of his friends from that punk gang that he was in are either dead or in jail. So he sort of turned his life around. He's gone on to obtain 78 acting credits, 12 producing credits, and 3 directing credits. His breakout role being Richard Donner's Goonies. He was considered for the role of Tom Hansen in 21 Jump Street, which is where he befriended John Depp. The role went on to Depp, but they remained friends. During the 90s and 2000s, his career actually sort of went through a bit of a hiatus and faded a bit. He was living as a day trader before the Coens put him in No Country for Old Men. And that sort of revitalized his career.
Sure did. What a movie. What a tremendous movie.
Incredible movie. But he was so into being a day trader, he went on to co-create marketprobability.com, an investment advice website. So he's really into the stonks. So he played both Ronald Reagan and George Bush in films. He has been in 4 films that went on to receive, well, I guess 5 films now, actually, since the nominations have been released. Best Picture nominations, No Country for Old Men, Milk, True Grit, and Dune Part 1 and Dune Part 2. He was almost cast as Batman instead of Ben Affleck. And it both sucks he wasn't cast, and is a miracle that he wasn't cast, because that means we haven't lost him as possibly being in the DC universe. Rumor being he is going to be the new Hal Jordan. Green Lantern, which is, I think it's good to see him as a good guy, not as a bad guy, not as a Phoenix.
Yeah, he does play a bad guy a lot, doesn't he? Country, he's not a bad guy.
But in comic book movies, he's like at best anti-hero, Cable. And he's actually appeared in 5 different comic book franchises: Guardians of the Galaxy, Deadpool, Men in Black, Jonah Hex, and Sin City. He played Eddie Mannix in Hail Caesar, while his wife, Diane Lane, played Mannix's wife in Hollywoodland. His son, Trevor, sketches all of the characters he performs before he performs them. He is good friends with Benicio del Toro, appearing in 5 films together: Guardians of the Galaxy, Inherent Vice, Sicario, Avengers Infinity War, and Sicario Day of the Soldado. And after one edition, and this is my closer for Josh, after one edition, he and Benicio were told by executive Meryl Poster that their auditions were the worst she had ever witnessed.
Wow.
It's because they were fooling around way too much. 2 buddies playing. That's our boy Josh.
Well, I'm excited to hear a little bit more about Mr. Brolin. So why don't we head downstairs? We're welcoming back our good friend Kalina Steckel, and she is going to join Bill and his lazy boy. Now he's got a frickin' pipe. So he just sits there in front of a fireplace with a pipe and a lazy boy making great conversation. God! He's so damn good. Bill? Kalina? Take it away.
Hello, Yes. Thank you, JD and Matt. Welcome into the conversation. And what a nominee we have today. Kind of a rarity here at the SNL Hall of Fame, a host who's hosted recently. You know, a lot of times we'll talk about people who are fantastic, but kind of disappear for two decades. Josh Brolin was here just last year in season 49. So I had to bring in someone who is a big movie buff, I know, and someone who is an actor herself. Kalina Steckel, how are you?
I'm great, Bill. I'm so excited to be here and talk about our host today. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. So what's we do the plugs at the top here. What have you had going on lately, and how's everything over at the SNN? I haven't seen you over there in a while with me. I know you were on recently, but...
I was on recently. Yeah, to be honest, I was working three jobs up until literally today. As of today, I'm down to one job. And so that has been a big factor as to why I have not been on the SNN lately. But we are getting back into a stable, manageable work-life balance, and one that allows me to be home by like 5 p.m. on Saturdays. And so I will finally get to watch the rest of the season in real time and be like very active with the rest of season 50 instead of catching up way after the fact. So we're in a good, you caught me on a good day, because we're in a good spot as of today.
Very good. Well, so since I haven't talked, I think the last time we were on together was Kristen Wiig last spring in 49. Wow. Yeah. So what have you thought about season 50 so far? As we're recording, we're getting close to the anniversary show.
We are so close to the anniversary show, which I'm so excited for. I'm going to be honest, and I feel almost compelled to like give it a warning that it's a hot take, but I don't know that it's that hot of a take, because I think maybe there's quite a few people who agree with me. I think the first half of season 50 has been a little underwhelming. And I think maybe part of that is our own fault, right, Bill? Like, I think we all, as fans, put so much stock into, like, it's season 50, and I think there was so much that we loved about the 40th anniversary special, and so I think we've been comparing, like, how are they going to go bigger and better, and how are they going to top themselves? So maybe I failed to manage my expectations a little bit, or maybe they are really doing a long game here and kind of a slow burn for the first half, and maybe... starting with the anniversary special and then leading us through the rest of the season, maybe there's a lot of punches that they're getting ready to pull. So we'll see. I'm by no means am I out of the game yet, but I am certainly hoping that they kind of up the ante a little bit.
Yeah, the expectations are key, because I think that was a big problem for me. I was pie in the sky with, you know, let's bring in 18 alumni every week and let's, you know, let's recreate season two in full. And, that hasn't actually come to fruition, but I think there's been some good stuff. We obviously had, you know, with the politics of it all and things like that, it was a little dicey, but I think we've had some good writing. So that's really key to... what we have. And I think the 50th will blow our minds. So
I think so too. I'm really excited.
But yeah, so let's talk about Josh. So as far as his career, he's an interesting case. He was in Goonies at a very young age, and then kind of disappears into the background players, doing a lot of stuff in the 90s, early 2000s, like on really crappy TV shows or unknown movies. And then he blows up in the mid-aughts, right?
He did, yeah. I have to confess that The Goonies is one of those movies that I just haven't seen. So, despite that being like maybe the thing that launched his career, honest to God, I don't even know the plot of that movie. Like it's one of those big things in pop culture that I'm weirdly like very removed from. So I know him more like No Country for Old Men, you know, like kind of post that era. And then recently he's been awesome in Dune, which has been really fun to watch. I've always thought he was a really talented actor, and I really like his writing. I think he's like a really poetic, really spiritual, artistic person. And I think he's been pretty open about the dynamic of his life and the journey that he's been through and the huge changes he's made through his sobriety and everything, and kind of how he changed as a person after that. And so I think he has a really beautiful, intelligent mind, and I think that makes him more interesting as an artist. So I think he's really cool, and he's an interesting person to have on SNL, which I know we're going to dive into a bit here.
Yeah, I mean, if this was a year ago, there's no way we'd be talking about him, and we had over at the SNN, John and I did the host countdown last year, and he ended up being 37 all time, which wouldn't have happened without the third you know, as you said, we'll get into that. But he had gone 12 years between appearances. His second appearance is okay. It's not great. It's not an awful banger. But it's very strange, especially considering SNL's connection with the Marvel Universe over the last few years. Felt like they had somebody on every week. And he never came on as Thanos. Like, that's crazy, right?
You would think Scarlett had the plug, if nothing else.
Right, exactly.
Colin's married to one of the Avengers.
But how did that not happen? Like, he's now one of the most famous evil people in cinematic history. It's nuts. But we do get him in 49, coming off of Dune, as you mentioned. You know, a lot of the times with the host nominations, we do have to talk about, you know, where have they been? Why haven't they been back? Right. I think you were on for Anne Hathaway, and that's one of the main components with her, that she's never come back. She had these amazing appearances and then just kind of disappeared.
Yeah, it's hard to say, you know, because I feel like we can get into kind of the inside baseball of all of it and be like, well, is a contract thing? Do they have something to promote? Did they have a bad experience or whatever? And sometimes I just don't think there is an answer. I don't like, there's certainly a formula to, I think, how they choose the host and the musical guest. And I think there is something to be said about, you know, fan favorites or episodes or sketches that have the most rewatchability or most clicks on YouTube or whatever it is. But it is kind of one of those looming, lingering questions of like, man, this person was really great. Why haven't I seen them for over a decade? Like what? Then what changed after those 12 years where they're like, you know what, we should call up Roland and see what he's doing, because it's been just about enough time.
Well, that's why I tell people, never give up hope for one of your favorites. As long as they're still on this planet, you know, Jack Black, Galifianakis, Anne Hathaway, you never know. Like, they could walk through that door tomorrow.
They sure could.
So let's start with his first episode. So we're talking about season 34, episode 5, October 18th, 2008, with somebody, musical guest Adele. I don't know whatever happened to her.
Some unknown, never heard any follow-up from her. Yeah, up and comer.
So as you went back to watch this episode, what did you think? I mean, this is, you know, kind of a time capsule episode.
That I was just about to use that exact phrasing, time capsule. Like, when I was going back and rewatching the episodes in preparation for our recording, I didn't really pay attention to like what years, you know, I just went to Peacock and like clicked on the season. And then it opens with Tina Fey and Sarah Palin. And I was like, right. This is like 2008. Like, this is in the middle of a really prominent time, not only in American history and American politics, but in SNL history too. Like, Tina Fey as Sarah Palin was such a huge thing. This episode in particular was chocked full of cameos, and also just kind of realizing where we were in like big things in SNL. Like, I didn't realize that this was Sandberg doing Mark Wahlberg Talks to Animals. Like, so many things that came up. I was like, wow, what a really special time to have been a guest on the show. And there are some really great sketches that come from this episode. One in particular, I imagine we'll talk about, that is not accessible anymore due to music rights. And it's a damn shame that I had to go deep on a Reddit thread to be able to find the sketch to rewatch.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, I mean, it is. It's, you know, you've got the convergence of SNL at its peak again because of all the Tina and Palin stuff. Mm-hmm. You have the financial crisis too, which gets brought up quite a bit.
An update,
Suze Orman, and it's bananas to think about. Plus, this is the final episode for Amy Poehler before she goes out on medical leave. For her first maternity child. So it's really crazy to think about how. I don't know if it's an all time episode, but it's certainly one that you would point people to.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, some all-time moments, if not an all-time episode.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So which sketch would you like to talk about first?
I don't know if it's like right to lead so strong, but I feel like I'm No Angel, right, is the number one. So for context, for anybody who doesn't know, this is a sketch that can't really be found unless you do some deep diving on the internet. Due to copyright, like music issues, this is a big problem for SNL fans, is a lot of sketches aren't really accessible on the internet anymore. That's why so many of the musical acts aren't featured on full episodes. And so this is one of those sketches that I think about often. I want to show people. I'm sometimes able to find small like clips, but I was trying to show the sketch to my fiance and I started like gaslighting myself. And I was like, did I make this up? Or is Josh Brolin not the person that's in this sketch? And so I went, there's no way. I know what this is. And so I found it deep on Reddit and it had a version that had the music. And so I was able to show it to him. And so the sketch is that Josh Brolin has a giant mustache and a mullet and he's sitting in a bar. And he sees beautiful, glowing Amy Poehler from across the way and encourages her to come over. And in an amazing reveal from a camera movement, Amy stands up to reveal in real life she is like fully 8 or 9 months pregnant.
What'd your baby do?
Yesterday.
And Amy has talked on a lot of podcasts and done interviews about this sketch because it became very famous. But it's an amazing moment because I don't know, like this sketch requires perfect timing from everyone involved. It requires perfect timing on Amy's part, especially because in the beginning, Amy and Josh are not in frame together. And so it requires like perfect directing. It requires perfect editing. It requires perfect movement of everyone. It requires like the perfect cut to Keenan's reaction when he's pouring the beers to the bartender and he looks down at her belly. Perfect setup of the props on the table with like Bill and Bobby and Andy for her to knock it over with her belly. There are so many moving parts. And the sketch is like 2 minutes long. It's such a short sketch. Barely any dialogue, is fully just relying on the comedy of Amy and the chemistry between her and Josh. And it is like, it's like a 10 out of 10 perfect sketch for me. It makes me laugh so hard. And it's just based on the way that she got her belly to move when she's standing there. It's yes. So good.
Absolutely. I mean, this is, and SNL rarely goes the route of little dialogue. You know, sometimes they can just have a word salad going on with these sketches and there's no dialogue other than the music. Until about a minute in,
and until halfway she through
makes her way across the bar, as you say, and she sits on Brolin's lap, and he's you know struggling, but happy.
She's like in a mini skirt, by the way, which the visuals just keep going. It's so good.
It's so good. Everybody does their part so well here, and then ultimately we get the reveal of it being Greg Allman. I'm no angel perfume.
The other thing is at the end, it's just an ad. It just gets funnier. It's like such a great build up. You know, I feel like there's so many formulas to writing like a good sketch. And obviously what's funny or what people consider is ever changing and subjective. But damn, if that's not a pretty good formula.
Yeah, I mean, we complain today in modern SNL with, you know, the buttons. Sometimes the buttons, they go too long. Or too much and they don't make sense, you know, as I've said, you know, sponsored by Uber Eats, like, well, what the hell does that have to do with the sketch we just saw? This is a great button, you know, this is, you know, and they bring out Forte as Allman to kind of drive home the point that this is just bananas.
Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah. And as I said, this is the last time we see Amy for a while. She has her child a week later. It's crazy that she was working up until that very last second.
Well, also amazing because one of the last lines of that sketch is Josh's character asks her when she's due and she says yesterday. And then that woman literally went and had a baby 7 days later. Like it's when you understand the gravity of the sketch, it's even more impressive.
And Brolin ends that part perfectly by saying, perfect.
Perfect.
So good. Brolin is showing immediately that he's game for anything, you know, to bring in this heavy hitter actor who's like, I don't have to say anything. I can just play the comedy. I think that really kind of shows his range.
Well, and I think that ends up kind of being a theme across his three episodes, right? Like, I think more than not, they kind of make Brolin one of the people in the scene, and he was kind of the support for who were the stars at the time. And that's not a bad thing. I think different hosts come on and they have different capabilities or talents or you know, we don't know how those first couple meetings are going. Maybe they're like really at the forefront. They're like, yeah, I want to be in everything. I want to be really involved. Or maybe they kind of just want to be off to the sidelines. You never know. But we end up seeing Brolin being a little bit more the straight guy, or he's playing like the really, really weird guy that is, it's almost so weird that it's just to remind you that this is the celebrity that's hosting this episode, because otherwise right. It's just been so much cast kind of in your face for the rest of it. And I don't think that's a bad thing, Bill. I think, like you said, maybe in modern times, we're a little bit more conditioned that we want to see them more. I know going over season 50, we've been going over the stats, and the hosts are actually not averaging a lot of screen time in their episodes, which is really interesting. So I think having him in that kind of different dynamic is not bad. And it just gives us something more interesting to talk about than usual.
Yeah, it's not bad. And it's also, you know, you mentioned the two different ways that he plays it, either completely straight or wacko. And I think that's key to a good host. It's not necessarily that they're at the top forefront of it all, but that they're able to say, put me in whatever, I don't care. Right. And we do see that over and over again with his hosting gigs. So what other sketch do you want to talk about as far as this? I have one, but I want to see if you have the same one as I do.
Is it fart face?
Of course it is.
Of course it's fart face. Listen, I mean, the title says it all, but you have Will Forte and Bill Hader in there, and I'm automatically going to love anything that either of them are in, but especially if the two of them are together. This was a sketch that stood out to me, I would say, especially after I watched all of Josh's episodes recently. This was the one where I felt like he really seemed the most locked in to what he was doing, because I'll talk later about my opinions about how I feel like he looks at cue cards a lot, and I find it kind of distracting. Or there are times where I feel like it seems like he just got, you know, the script like right before they went live, and like he's kind of catching up. Like there are times where I feel like maybe he's not fully present. But this one I felt like he was excited to do. Like there was such, and I mean this in a sweet way, there was such like little boy energy amongst the three of them. Like three, like, you know, grade school boys who were like snickering in the corner, getting in trouble over something.
Who's Carl again?
Fartface. I think it might be best if we had just addressed Fartface as just plain Carl.
Well, if it's all the same, I'd like to continue calling him Fartface.
Oh, great. Thanks, Jerry.
Look, I'm going to miss saying Fartface as much as you, but it's unfair because if you've spent any time with Carl, you know his face does not smell of farts, but rather of face.
Odor-wise, I'd agree, but I'm talking about appearance. See, I believe that if a fart did have a face, it would look exactly like Fartface here.
How dare you?
You've gone over the line, Jim.
Well, you served me the Kool-Aid, Jerry. I just drank it.
And I feel like he really matched the energy of Will and Bill, which is hard to do because one of those guys has enough energy to blow the ceiling off a building. But you put the two of them together and then you throw the host in as the only other person and ask them to keep up. And it's a hard ask. And I think he did a really good job just kind of maintaining that. And if anything, maybe even egging them on to keep building them up higher and higher. Because that's what we look for in sketches, right? Is you want like elevations and then you want something absurd to kind of end the sketch. I think that's what we look for as our ideal. And I think that's what happens here. It's a silly premise. I don't know how you can't laugh when people just keep saying the phrase fart face over and over again. Like, how do you not just feel goofy when you're watching it?
We're all transformed back into 10-year-olds, right?
Exactly. Like yes. How do you feel about it if this was one that was marked for you?
I love this sketch. And it's really funny because I heard Forte recently, you know, everybody's making the rounds doing their 50th anniversary press junkets. And he talked about how this got the least amount of laughs that he could ever remember. And if you watch that live sketch, there's only one time somebody laughs. And it's jarring because, like, do they not know what to think of it? I mean, the audience isn't always, it's only 300 people. They don't always know what to make of something, especially that's as bizarre as this. But this has stood out as an all-time classic for Forte, for sure.
That's great.
And I think this would go on Brolin's reel. I mean, there's so many great lines in this.
Yeah.
You know, back and forth, as you said, that, you know, it's all about calling Forte fart face. Yeah. Josh comes in as the businessman that they're trying to get a deal from, and Hader tells him that he needs to call him fart face too, and then kind of reneges on it. And they keep over explaining everything, which is really what makes it, you know. Yeah. I'm not saying his face smells of farts, but a face. I mean, on paper, that sounds ludicrous, right?
But yeah, but you put those guys doing it and then it's funny. Yeah.
Or even drinking the Kool-Aid. I love that part of it as well.
Yeah.
Right?
So where good.
I'm speaking metaphorically. No one thinks you're going to spit all over the room and ruin anything in this room.
I just love it. I love it. I'm so glad that was on your list because
it
would have been awkward if that was absolutely. My number one and you're like, oh, okay. Grow up, Kalina. Yeah.
But I think you put it perfectly that, you know, he does kind of elevate this in a way that, you know, I don't think you could throw any host into this particular sketch and think you're going to get what you get. I think that's kind of what makes him a great host, what we get to see in a sketch like this.
I agree. I would say the other one that stood out to me, and unfortunately this is, well, not unfortunately per se, but this is one of those scenarios where he is just being the support or he is like the fuel for the other, is the proposal sketch. Pardon me that I don't know the formal name of it, but
I think it is surprise. It's just surprise.
It's just called surprise. Yeah. Okay, great.
Yeah.
He does his job because if he's breaking or if he's not, you know, playing the straight man, then everything that Kristen or the supporting cast is doing also doesn't work, right? So just because his part isn't as funny or as big or dramatic as hers, it doesn't mean it's not equally important. But man, this was a character that I kind of forgot about just because I feel like I haven't seen a sketch featuring that character lately. And man, I was laughing so hard and I had to get up and go do a task. And I actually paused the sketch because I didn't want to be distracted from missing out on it. And that's a big deal, I think, in general, but especially for sketches I've seen before or like recurring characters that I've seen before, for me to, so long after the fact, still want it to have my full attention, I think is a great example of how moments like that stand the test of time. I'm always a big fan when we get to see any host or cast member going deep into some physical comedy. I love breakaway walls and doors because they just never work all the way. And I love the split second moment where the actor has to figure out how to still finish the bit, even though maybe their foot got caught in the breakaway wall or something. And I just feel like from this sketch, there are so many fun standout moments. And as you said earlier, this is an example of a sketch that you would like want to show someone to get them to watch the show or, you know, to show them certain characters. So I loved it. This is, like you said, this is a pretty strong episode that has classic sketches.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things when we get dramatic actors in, especially for the first time, you get somebody like Baldwin all the way back in 90, 89, and you get somebody like Adam Driver, you don't know what you're going to get until they get in the building. So this is really, I think, the first sketch after monologue, basically. You do get the MacGruber runner, but so you don't know what Brolin's actually going to bring, right?
That's so true.
And to put him in with the heavyweight like Kristen, and this is only the second time she's done this, and she's just a whirlwind. She's everywhere with this, and he holds his own. And I think that's really important, you know, even though he is playing, as you said, that straight role, kind of, you know, downplaying what he's doing while she's running around crazy. That's not easy to do, as you know, right?
Yeah. And she also really has to hold her like anxious energy throughout that entire sketch too, because she goes off camera a couple times or her character leaves the room. That it's so hard to keep yourself in a state and still like your physical body still has to complete tasks or do technical things. Like it's actually a really fascinating thing to study, but she's the greatest, you know, for a reason. So this is not surprising, but still impressive to watch.
Yeah. So I think we've got a really solid to super solid episode here in Brolin's first go round.
I think so too.
And then, you know, it's only a couple years, and we get season 37. He comes back, episode 19, April 14th, 2012, with Gautier. So as he says in a future monologue, someone that he used to know.
Great joke. Because it's the one song I know from him.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was everywhere at that point. Right. But yeah. And he's back to promote Men in Black 3, which is coming out later that year. Right. So what did you think of this episode as you went back and rewatched it? Is there anything that kind of stood out for you as far as Brolin goes?
I have the least amount of notes on this episode. If that gives you an initial indicator. Not saying the two are directly correlated, but as you said, he came back just a short, couple of years after his first hosting stint, and then we didn't see him again for over a decade. And I'm not necessarily saying that his performance or the writing or anything on this particular episode directly affected that, but it is an interesting thing to consider that this was kind of it paled in comparison maybe to the first one, and then we didn't see him for a while. I will say that a first thing I noticed was that he just overall felt more confident, which I think seems kind of obvious, right? Like, you do it once, you kind of understand how the machine works. The monologue was short and sweet. I was surprised across all three monologues, and I don't know if maybe this was an instance of where the version that I saw in Peacock was really cut short. His monologues, at least that are available, are really short and are just very, like, straightforward, I'm here for promotion. Like, there's not a lot of bits or like cast involved musical numbers that happened.
Right.
So that's something that kind of stood out to me. Then Californians came up and I was really excited. And I was like, wow, this is kind of early. I wonder if this was one of the first ones. I looked it up and allegedly this is the debut of the Californians.
It certainly is. Yeah.
I mean, I have to admit that that's one of those sketches that it took me a while to come around to.
Same.
And I think a lot of people, right? Because it seems really stupid. And those sketches go on forever. Those are like 4+ minute sketches. And you can only do the same bit so many times over and over. And there's never really like a fulfilling end to it, right? Like, it kind of does the thing and then they all stand in the mirror and then the sketch is eventually over at some point.
So, you have cancer.
Are you serious?
Yeah, man. Don't even worry, because there's a good treatment center in Marina del Rey. There's lots of street parking, and if not, there's a coffee bean across the street that fully validates. I live right by there. That's how I know.
All the way on the other side of the tent?
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes, Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service, real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.
It was so fun just seeing the cast trying to keep it together. Everyone kind of barely seemed to know what was going on. Like, maybe they had lightly touched on how everything was going to go. Right. I have a suspicion that maybe the specific like Valley accents were only lightly, shown to the cast ahead of time. I feel like maybe they went pretty hard for the live show. And I think Josh was fun in this, that's again, another, it's hard to be, that's a sketch that has a lot of the heavy hitter cast members in it, right? Like, that's a proper like ensemble sketch. Yeah. And it's not like any of them knew that that was going to go on to become one of those like legendary recurring sketches. So it's not like Josh was capable of knowing the pressure of being in that. But I do think about the amount of people that would eventually kind of come through in those sketches in the future. And it was just kind of fun that he got to be part of the first one. So yeah. that was what I was excited for. The cast was breaking a lot, and it was like, it was just silly. They were just having a silly, fun little time in that sketch.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny. I mean, this is nothing to do with Brolin, but it's the only time Kate appears in the Californians. So this is right at the beginning of her tenure. She had just joined the show. And I found it jarring going back and watching this. Like, Kate's
what is she doing here?
So I had to look it up, and she never did another one, even though she was in the cast for all of them.
Yeah.
Josh really does hold it together. They all seem to be finding their way through it, as you said. And, you know, the varying part of the charm and the maybe the cringe of this is the varying degrees of people being able to do an accent like that. And Josh doesn't even try.
One of my notes just said, Brolin, not great with the accent.
No, he's just, you know, for a trained method actor, he's just kind of like, no.
Who at least part-time resides in California. I will say, too, another thing about the Californian sketch is I didn't start finding it, like, really funny until I lived in California. And I was like, oh, wait, I get this. Like, not only do I know the roads they're talking about, but I've met these people and I have had these conversations. And it's a little bit deeper if you actually understand the lore. But yeah, I think it was fun. I liked that it was kind of earlier on in the episode. I want to just touch on this quickly because it doesn't really involve him. I did not remember that we get the Spielberg cameo for Lasercat 7.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
We can touch on that. I mean,
sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, Lasercatch is just great, right? But I sometimes forget the power that SNL has to just anyone can show up, Bill. Anybody can show up.
We did.
There are no rules.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we didn't talk about it for his first monologue, but Oliver Stone, the only time he ever appears on the show is in the monologue. Yeah. And this is only one of two times that Spielberg, he had a tiny, tiny cameo in season one when nobody knew who he was. He was in the monologue of a Peter Boyle episode.
Wow.
So, like, yeah, for him, all these years later, obviously what he had become.
Right. And showing up for that sketch.
Yeah, right.
Lasercat 7.
Steven. Yeah, but Brolin's good in this. I mean, he has to play the Raiders of the Lost Ark space Nazi.
Uh-huh.
You know, they're mixing all of Spielberg's metaphors into one huge mess of a Lasercat 7.
Yeah. Well, and I wonder how much of, because Spielberg was executive producer on Goonies or produced it. Like, I forget the extent of his involvement.
He was involved. I can't remember.
He was involved. Yeah. And so I would imagine maybe that was some sort of reunion connection of some sort for Brolin, right? Like, I like to think that there's something there. And I don't know. Like, I think any actor, it's a dream role to either be involved in a Spielberg production or even just, like, in a parody of something that he did. So even though he's playing the space Nazi, you're still getting to be, like, part of Raiders, right? Like, it's still something. I think he had a fun time.
Yeah. And you get Eat. Not E.T., but Eat.
Right, Eat.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, Lasercats has definitely run its course, but the added bonus of Brolin and Spielberg definitely
so good.
So where should we go next? I mean, there's a couple other, you know, pretty good ones that we could talk about, but
yeah, you know, why don't you take the lead and I'll see if I have any matching ones? Because like I said, I didn't have a ton of notes for this one.
Well, and this is another one of those that kind of, It's disappeared off the internet mostly.
But what is it, like 47 minutes I think we had access to or something?
Right.
Yeah.
Woodridge High.
Yes, Woodridge that High. Was on there for me. Yeah.
So this was a great concept of, you know, slow motion hallway. Bill Hader's explaining to Vanessa, you know, how this hallway works. And take it from there.
Oh, man.
Were you able to watch this one?
Oh, wait.
It is hard to.
No, hold on. I think I was confusing that with the school events at the Ramada end. Okay. Then I don't think I saw the one you're referring to.
Okay. So this was, and this is hard because of music rights again, but it is out there. Basically, Vanessa's a new student at the school. Bill Hader's the principal. And
there's
this slow motion hallway. And, you know, they start with Taryn and Nassim walking really slowly down the hallway. And Vanessa's confused why they're walking this way. You know, at first it seems like it's just a movie concept, but no, she sees what's happening. Okay. And Josh Brolin comes out as a teacher who's stuck in this hallway too, who's trying to figure out why this hallway is this way. Okay. A lot of people think it's been cursed by a witch, but no, he thinks it's scientific. But it's just this hallway. The rest of the school is normal.
Okay.
So that's the wacko conceit of this. But it's a much smaller role for Brolin.
Sure.
But it is one of those that kind of has been lost to time, but is kind of important to talk about.
Oh, man, that sounds so fun. I'm so bummed that so Bill Nye, you and I were talking before we recorded that you were kind of getting your episodes from a couple different mediums where I was just going on Peacock. And so I'm like blindly unaware of maybe some of the sketches that I didn't even know were supposed to be part of it. Maybe that's part of why I don't have as many notes on this episode. I will then counter that. One of the ones I had marked was the Ramada Inn sketch, like the school fundraiser.
School function.
Yeah, the school function that's going on there.
Yeah.
Man, that was great. Everyone was really fun in that. I thought Josh was really good in that one. He plays a teacher who has maybe gotten inappropriately involved with one of the students, and he's just having a hard time, and people keep letting him have access to the microphone.
You know, we should never let teenagers pick a prom theme. Hunger Games prom? All right, sure. Let's have a prom with no food and lots of weapons. Huh? Okay, that's what you wanted. Look, I know you talk about me. You think I had an affair with a student? Well, let me tell you something, make something perfectly clear. I did! I had an affair with a student, she was hot! So who's the play yacht now, huh? Yo.
Okay, thank you.
And it's kind of one of those classic SNL setups where it's just like a parade of people coming in over and over, right? Like it's a pretty stagnant kind of tableau and you're just shuffling the cast through over and over again. But I gotta say Jay Farrow really stands out. I remember this sketch, but I didn't remember it until I was like watching it in full. And I think I've seen so many clips of the Dear Teachers and Students bit that he does.
Right.
Was this one that was marked down for you?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is a Jay Farrow showcase that we didn't, unfortunately, didn't get as much as we should have. But okay. Yeah, Brolin is great in this. He's playing drunk. You know, it's a prom function. He, as you said, he's involved with his student and definitely should not be. And it's a good example of what Brolin can do outside of the box, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Yeah. And I got to say, the only other one I really had marked down. The Piers Morgan sketch is fun, but I think it's more fun because it's something for Taryn to do. And then Andy is the guy dancing on the wire, just gets a crazy laugh out of me every time. But again, that's one of those things where like, I feel like they kind of just had to write in something for the host. And if you weren't kind of up to date, like socially on what was going on, maybe it's lost on you like a little bit. And so I feel like it's a bit of like a throwaway because I don't know the context of who Josh was in that sketch.
I am the biggest baseball fan in the world, and I still had forgotten about Ozzie Guillen's. You know, so he was a manager of the Marlins kind of spoke off the cuff. And I think it had to do with Nazis, but I can't remember exactly. But yeah, it was one of those like, oh yeah, he did that. So as you said, it is a strange kind of,
you got to be a bit in the know.
Yeah.
But
if you were in the know, it's a long time ago.
Yeah. And then I think the other highlight of this episode for me was, you know, we get a fun update and then we get Garth and Kat on update, which is never not a great time. That's one of those kind of perfect update guests that is just, it's never not going to make you laugh because the thing just works every time.
Yeah. I mean, so this is a pretty good episode. I think, as I said, you know, if we were talking a year ago, we probably wouldn't even have Josh Brolin on our tongue because it's just great episode, pretty good episode.
Right.
Don't see him for a dozen years.
But right.
Then.
Then we get this episode. Yeah, I did not realize how many sketches came from this episode. I have so many notes on this episode.
There you go.
Awesome. There's so much to say about it.
Yeah, I mean, you can fall into recency bias with SNL for sure, but I think this definitely stands out as one of the best episodes of 49 by far.
I agree.
By far. I agree. And this is, so 49, episode 14, March 9th, 2024, with musical guest Ariana Grande. And there's just so much to go. Give me your first impression of this episode. What do you want to touch on first?
Well, first impression is that it's just a great episode. I agree. I think it's one of the best, if not the best, of 49. the shrimp tower, like the Vienna shrimp tower sketch, I think is probably my favorite. But also, I love Moulin Rouge, both the movie and the show, more than probably anyone should. And this sketch was so funny. This is, unfortunately, is another one of those that doesn't really have anything to do with Brolin except for a small part in it. But man, there are just a lot of long-lasting sketches came from this episode, you know? And he had, I think, a much bigger part in these. I think he was in a lot more sketches in this episode than maybe his first two, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, well, so let's start with Shrimp Tower. I know over at the SNN, John and I talked about the best sketches of 2024, and this was very high up on the list.
Yeah.
And you want to break it down for the audience as far as what's happening in Shrimp Tower?
Oh God, I don't even know if I could really describe it. So they're in Vienna and they're at some ball or some reception of some kind. And Josh is playing, I don't know, kind of this like astute, eligible bachelor, I believe.
Right.
But there is no woman or thing that his eyes desire more than this obscenely large, beautiful shrimp tower that is like decorated on the edges of champagne glasses.
Indeed, the Archduchess has seen many of the world's great splendors, but she has never seen anything like this.
What is it, Kinski?
I call it the Shrimp Tower, a new invention of mine. I just thought of it last night.
I do feel I've seen shrimp at a party before.
Stacked up like that in a tower? As high as the heavens? I don't think so.
And it's all shrimp.
Indeed, from top to bottom, nothing but shrimp.
And whatever you think the sketch is going to be exceeds your expectations into something absolutely off the walls and bananas about every 30 seconds. And that is what I love, is that it just keeps getting crazier and crazier. It's also a great Sarah Sherman vehicle. Like, she is so fun in this. Her and Josh are so fun with each other. The amount of physical comedy that happens kind of simultaneously, right? Like, Josh has to be kind of giving his speech and doing his thing and being funny as his character, while a tiny, like, deep background version of Sarah is like climbing, like scaling a tree or doing something in the background. And it gets a little violent and a little bloody, and it's, I don't know, it's also shot kind of cinematically. Like, there's so many fun little things to cherry pick about it. And my couple of notes are, it is just as funny as the first time I watched it. And I will say, I don't know that I've really watched it since it aired last year. It is just ridiculous and over the top, which to me is what makes a perfect SNL sketch. Like, when they just go, like, I don't know, like, boss isn't here today, like, no rules, like, do whatever we want. That's when it's the best. And I do think, confidently, after three episodes, I think that Josh shines in the pre-tapes. And maybe that's just by nature of, like, what he does as a career. But between this and what we'll talk about later, the JetBlue or Jet Air pre-tape, he really finds his footing in those. And I think this was a great example of that.
Yeah, perfectly said. I think this is, you know, it's really hard, especially if you watch SNL as we do, and to find a zig or a zag that we're not expecting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think last year, the other one that we got was My Best Friend's House with Ariana Grande. That was similar to that, where you think you know where it's going, and then you don't. Even though they do bring out some common tropes, you know, she dies three different times, and then, you know. but the obsession with shrimp and the way that everybody else plays off of him, Dismukes and Jazz, you know, Mikey, why are you so obsessed with the shrimp? I think I've seen shrimp at a party before. and he doesn't care. Like, he wants to get married, but no, it's much more important to showcase the shrimp tower.
The shrimp, yeah.
Yeah. And eventually they are able to get together. They have a wonderful dance together. He eats the shrimp backwards for some reason, knocks the tower over himself.
Start with the tail.
How else should I eat it?
So it's perfect writing and it's perfect delivery.
Yes. Yeah. And it's
across the board.
It's just one of those that you would absolutely show somebody who has not watched SNL, has checked out. You got to go watch this. This is something that you have to see. And Brolin is a huge part of that.
I feel like that's a friendship compatibility test. Like, I feel like if you show your friend that sketch and they don't laugh, you're like, delete my number. Like, lose it. We don't even know each other anymore.
Exactly.
So that one's really great. Let's see.
Well, you did mention the airplane song. So do you want to talk about that while we're there?
Let's go there. You this was going to be on your list, right? You had mentioned this earlier.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Why don't you lead us into it? Because I loved it, but my notes are a little bit shorter than some of the other sketches.
So this is one of those wacky Dismukes pieces that really goes off. You think it's relatable. You think it's something that you can understand. It opens with him. His phone is dead. His Kindle's dead. The headphones are $30 from the airline, so he's not having it. So he decides to start watching over the shoulder of Josh Brolin, who's watching Ad Astra for reason. And it turns into this ridiculous musical number, right?
I got my Kindle and some headphones. Life couldn't be better. And when I look up, I see they got my favorite movie ever. I'm watching Ad Astra. Brad Pitt's in the zone. I look over my shoulder and realize I am not alone. Because back there is a man. He's watching me, man. He's watching me.
Like the small details of it being Ad Astra, which is not a movie that came out a long time ago, but it's not recent. I think it was like 2018 or 2019 that Ad Astra came out.
Right.
It's really catchy. It was really funny. It was really well written. Like the jokes are landing, like the melody and the rhymes are good. The visual setup for the jokes are fun. And I thought that Dismukes and Brolin had really good chemistry with each other, because I feel like that's maybe one of the things you can kind of worry about is like maybe a cast member has this really specific idea and maybe the cast member's down for it, but maybe there's just something that's not connecting and it ends up being kind of like, oh, well, that happened. Okay, that made it to air. Good for you. And this just was not one of those cases, you know, it's one that gets stuck in your head. And I don't think pre-tapes always have as much rewatchability for me as live sketches, because I think I just like the higher stakes with live sketches. And I like kind of seeing the little blips where maybe something doesn't go quite right. And sometimes I feel that the pre-tapes are too perfected, but this is definitely one of those ones that I would happily rewatch over and over.
Yeah, they develop this bromance that's just, and the song is catchy. And, he says he'll let him watch as long as he can tell him what just happened. And he says, Brad Pitt is at Astra. No, he's not. And then you get the added Keenan and Chloe Trost of it, with Keenan being the air marshal who joins in and tells him to let him enjoy it as well. And that's so much great stuff going on with this one.
It
for
is.
Sure.
It's really great. And then
let's talk about the hair too, really quickly. Like when they cut to the dream sequence, and I think they pulled his hair out from "I'm No Angel." And gave it a little brush,
like a beautiful long.
Yeah, and Dismukes is wearing the Bolton hair from like early '91. Like it's bananas. Yeah,
that's what you nailed it exactly. When I was rewatching it, I was like, this reminds me of something really specific. It's totally Bolton. It's totally Michael Bolton.
Definitely Bolton. Yeah.
Oh man, so good.
Yeah, we've only touched the surface of this episode. Like we can just go on and on.
Well, listen, it wasn't without its like weird moments too. Mm-hmm. Like I did notate that the monologue was just kind of odd to me. Like I didn't quite understand what I thought they were trying to do. Like what, regardless of whether or not it worked for me, I didn't quite understand what their objective was. I think it was maybe to like poke fun of the fact that that's like what his Instagram is, or that he like writes and I know he wrote a book that was not as commercially successful as he hoped it would be. And so I think maybe it was like touching on that a little bit, but it felt kind of drawn out. And then why he just kind of derobed and did a cold plunge, I was just like, what's going on? Like, yeah. Who pitched this and what is it doing? Like, to start? Because I always, my criticism during the monologues a lot of times is I want it to kind of be like right before the engines start, right? Like, it should be getting me so hyped to be like, oh my gosh, what is the first sketch going to be? Like, show me that you're excited to be here. Show me that you're caffeinated or that you slept or like I want to be excited to see whatever you're going to do. And so if the monologue isn't strong for me, I kind of then put that energy into the first sketch and kind of wait to be picked up with the wind. Right. And so him kind of doing the cold plunge, I was just like, okay, like, yeah, off we go, I guess.
Between that and the Chalamet poem, which I still don't know if it's true or not. Now, did he write a poem about Chalamet? I don't know. Was that part of the joke?
It's such a specific thing to not be true. So I would be curious about that as well. But I don't know.
I mean, we know he didn't write the poem about Keenan, right?
But. Right. But and maybe. He probably
maybe he did. I mean, that's maybe possible.
Well, because I think he gets sentimental when he's working, right? And he's... Yeah. We've done, you know, a couple of the Dunes with him, and I don't know, maybe he wrote something really sweet and prolific and people just took it in a weird way. Who's to say?
I do like the joke and talking about how the place has changed and not really, you know, there's one new band guy. And then he does mention Adele being, I think it was her American debut on national television.
Oh, wow. Okay.
2008. I'm not positive, but I'm pretty sure. And then he does mention Gautier and, you know, that somebody that he used
somebody
to know.
Somebody I used to know.
Yeah. So there are some good jokes, but yeah, it does kind of go off the rails a bit.
Yeah.
But again, he's showing how game he is. I mean, he's undressing and jumping in this ice bath on national television.
But then it leads us into the bank robbery sketch, which he's nearly naked for that sketch again. So I don't know if that was the draw, was just to show people that Thanos is still fit. Not sure what it was there. That one was fun. I thought Heidi really carried the bank robbery sketch. I will say that this is one of the times where I felt a bit critical of Josh's performance. Again, I don't ever know like the scenario of when this got added, or maybe they thought it was going to be cut, or like whatever it is. But I felt like he was struggling to keep up in this sketch. I felt like he was looking at the cue cards so much. He just was not off book. You know, like it kind of seemed like he was just kind of thrown in and was just doing his best to be there. So I was a little bit disappointed that was kind of the first sketch that we were leading into. But Heidi made up for it and it was still funny. It's not like it was a write-off sketch. And then as we've talked about, the rest of this episode builds and builds and builds. So it's okay if it started off a little bit weaker, but it was interesting that coming from the kind of mid-tier episode that we had 12 years prior, that it doesn't necessarily start off with this huge bang. And so it was a little bit of like, oh, is it going to be another 12 years? Okay, no, it's okay. It's all right. We got this.
I think the problem with this sketch, even though as you said, Heidi's so great, I think Heidi's like channeling her inner Kristen Wiig in this for sketch. Sure. And instead of playing the straight role, he's trying to be as crazy as she is.
Right.
And it just, that part of it doesn't translate.
It just doesn't work. Yeah. Yeah.
But I think other than that, it's a pretty good sketch. The concept of, you know, they've opened their marriage up and they're trying to seduce these bank robbers. Yeah. But it is another opportunity for him to take his clothes off. So.
Yeah, it's one of those moments that we talked about where like the sketch works, but maybe he wasn't the right actor for it. And I feel like the cast members talk about that a lot, where they have sketches that they try to float for years and years and years. And it's not until one host happens to come in and is like, oh, I could do this, or I'm really game for this. And this might have just been one of those, you know, small misses. And
yeah, I mean, it's not an indictment on the host necessarily. I mean, the Cowbell documentary that we just got, Will Ferrell talks about how he had pitched that in the Norm MacDonald episode.
Yeah.
And Norm's an all-timer, but how different is the Cowbell sketch without walking? Like, it's
can't even imagine.
Yeah. So there's definitely some merit to that. But so there are a couple of other really good sketches in this episode, and a lot of that has to do with Brolin. Where do you want to go next?
Oh, man. The People Pleaser support group is pretty fun. Yeah. I think that's, I don't know, I think that's just, like you said, I think people like when their more tame sketches start off as relatable, where you're like, oh, I get that. Yeah, that's really funny because I've been through that before. We also get the Ariana Grande cameo where she ends up being a really small supporting cast member this episode, I think, because we see her pop up quite a few times. There wasn't like a ton for Brolin to do in the sketch. I do kind of feel that was another example where he was a little bit more background, like a little bit part of the ensemble. But again, if he's not nailing his lines, or like he still has a job to do in the sketch, even if he's not at the forefront. Was this one that stood out to you?
Yeah, I think I like that, but I also like his bizarre energy in something like Wine and Cheese Night. So when he's at this gathering of neighbors and the cat is attracted to his lap.
I feel like I didn't see the sketch. I don't know if I know which one you're talking about.
So basically there's six people at this party, and Dismukes and Sarah's cat comes out and sits on Brolin's lap. And so they're just kind of, they're kind of amazed because the cat is kind of skittish around strangers. And Brolin just dives into this and is so excited that this cat is into him.
Oh my gosh, babe, look, Tiger's cuddled up with Randall now.
Yeah, little guy just crawled over and curled up on my lap.
This is crap.
You must have good energy too, Randall.
Oh, must he? Must he have good energy? Or is it just your cat? Is it one big damn slut?
Hey, now, Chris, there's no need to call my cat that.
Hey, I just calls him like I sees him. Your cat's a slut, busting it open for every lap at this lame-ass Wine and Cheese Night.
Hey, that's my cat you're talking about. You take that back.
Yeah, whatever, this party sucks.
Apparently has this terrible job where he does these terrible things. And he just kind of becomes obsessed with it. And he's like, so the cat never does this with anybody else, huh? And Dismukes like, yeah, are you okay, buddy? Like, you know. And eventually the cat moves over to Devin, and Brolin just goes ballistic and can't, you know, calls the cat a slut and can't believe that the cat is, and eventually brings the cat back onto his lap. He's got bloody claw marks all over his arms.
Right.
Forcing the cat to be with him again.
I vaguely remember this from watching it in real time, but I don't know how I possibly missed it on this rewatch, but
maybe it's not on Peacock. Yeah, I mean, it could be.
I don't know. Maybe it is, and I just somehow missed it, but that makes me definitely want to go back and rewatch it, because that sounds just so very silly, and it sounds like it's a nice opportunity for him to kind of show a little bit more of his comedy chops, which we don't always get to see him do.
Yeah, so he does kind of vary back and forth. So this comes right after People Pleaser, and where he's playing the more subdued role, as you say, and goes into this bananas version of himself with this.
Yeah.
Did you want to talk about Shonda, or was there another one that you...
I think Shonda was the last one that I had a whole lot of notes on that wasn't just about Moulin Rouge. I did feel like that one went on for a little bit longer than I wanted it to, but again, that's kind of just like, that just happens sometimes. Like, sometimes it's just about filling the hour, right? Like, it's not necessarily because they should have done anything different. He didn't have a lot of lines in that one, but I did feel like he was a little bit more like present and connected, and so it allowed me to enjoy it a little bit more, and it was funny. I liked the reveals in it. I don't know. Not necessarily the strongest of the episode. I think there were more standout sketches, but it was still a good one to have in there. I don't think there were any explicitly bad sketches by any means from this episode.
No, I mean, I think, as you said, Moulin Rouge, he doesn't have a lot to do. He comes out after Bowen and Ariana have been singing, and talks about how they were trying to work in, how did they put it? I can't remember. They were trying to work in the spoken form of kitschy, kitschy, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he did great. Like, his bit was really funny.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes that's it. You just come in, you do your lines, and
then you go.
Funny. Yeah. 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 So I think overall, this is a pretty good showcase of what we get from Brolin, right? I mean, I think it's been a long time. And
I think his energy was so high in this one. And starting on episode 2, when he does his goodnights, he thanks Lauren and the cast for the greatest show in the world. And so you physically hear it, but you see like his excitement. He's happy to be there. Like he's excited that he gets to do this for a week. And like you said, he shows that he's really game for anything. Like he's able to be the guy in the background. He's able to be the straight guy. He's able to be the guy with the cat scratch, you know, the bloody marks on his hands. So I think that's always something that can kind of perceive or like change my perception of how I might view an episode as a whole. Like, even if maybe the writing wasn't the strongest or I didn't love every sketch, when I just feel like the host wanted to be there, it kind of bumps up the point average for me, right? Like you're just like, man, then I'm happy for you. I'm happy for you that you got to be there. I think he was definitely the most confident in this episode, having done it a couple times. And that wouldn't have necessarily been something to expect with such a long gap. Like who knows how much of it he remembered or how much of it had changed. He's also having to kind of develop chemistry with all new cast members. And so who knows, maybe from his perspective, it felt like a totally different show, but I think he killed it.
Yeah. So do you think it'll be another 12 years or do you think we'll see him as a four-timer fairly soon?
I think we would get him back fairly soon. I think it would be a bad choice from the show to have his episode do so well and to not have him back pretty soon. And I think he just wants to be there. And like you said, don't hold your breath because anyone can come back. I think he'll be with us sooner rather than later.
So, Kalina, we've covered a lot of ground with Josh Brolin here. So here's your chance to tell the voters and people around the water cooler why Josh Brolin should be in the SNL Hall of Fame.
Oh, boy. Well, I think I have a lot of the same factors. Like, if you listen to me on different shows, you're going to hear me list off the same things. But that's because it's what I've decided is important to me as a longtime fan. So like I said, I want to know that they're excited to be there. Like I want it to not just be the gig you do because it's what you should do. I want it to be the gig you do because it's like every person's dream to do this. And I think SNL is such a special thing that exists. I think we're so lucky that it still exists. And so seeing hosts that are just very present for it is a big thing for me. Hosts that don't seem to have any kind of ego really floating over them, you know, they'll embarrass themselves, they'll put on the silly wigs, they'll sing and dance and do, I don't know, kind of whatever best suits the show or fits the sketches. I think he definitely has that quality. I think he's charismatic. I think he's naturally funny. I think he has good timing. And even if he's not perfect at all of the other things, even if he maybe looks at the cue cards more than I want him to, like as a viewer, I still think that he possesses so many of the qualities that you need to just be successful on the show. And he is. And I don't think he would have come back and hosted 3 times if that wasn't widely agreed with. So I think he is a very good pick. I think he has a lot of versatility. And I think, frankly, there's a lot more that we can see from him in future hosting gigs.
So there's that. I want to thank Kalina so much for such a tight argument. Very good work, Bill and Kalina. I learned a lot. I learned a lot between you and Matt. I'm not sure that I need to know anything more about Josh Brolin. You know, very interesting. And I've liked his turns on the show as a cast member. I'm just not sure he's a Hall of Famer. I think he needs a couple more episodes in him under the belt and Joe and Shari and I will get more into this on the water cooler this week, but, that's just sort of, you know, my hot take off the top. But I think, if anyone were to be convinced, they would be convinced having listened to Kalina and Bill. So there's that. Let's go now to the featured sketch of the week. This is aptly titled Shrimp Tower. Smile if you remember.
Kinski, old boy. You've outdone yourself this time.
Yes, this is truly quite the affair.
Oh, gentlemen, you flatter me.
The Archduchess will be here shortly. May I remind you that a marriage would not only increase your rank, but stabilize the family for years to come.
Yes, but I hear she's a difficult woman to impress.
Indeed, the Archduchess has seen many of the world's great splendors, but she has never seen anything like this.
What is it, Kinski?
I call it the Shrimp Tower. A new invention of mine. I just thought of it last night.
I do feel I've seen shrimp at a party before.
Stacked up like that in a tower? As high as the heavens? I don't think so.
And it's all shrimp.
Indeed, from top to bottom, nothing but shrimp. Shrimp, 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 shrimp. Or as I like to call them, the sinking man's mozzarella sticks.
I do say, Kinski, you're quite mad for shrimp.
Though I can't help but notice it does seem rather precariously placed.
Why, that's part of its delicate charm. Needless to say, if anything were to happen to my shrimp tower, I would obviously kill myself.
Wait! She's here.
The Archduchess Sophie von Klostenberg!
My God, she's beautiful.
Count Kinski, thank you for inviting me to your palace. I must say, it feels like home, and perhaps one day it will be.
I think the shrimp tower is working.
I mean, I suppose so.
Oh, look, he's going to dance with her.
Kinski? Why did you do that?
What? I thought she was going to knock over the shrimp tower.
Good God, man, what were you thinking?
Oh, so I'm insane? I'm the only one who thought she was going to knock over the shrimp tower? Show of hands. Who else thought she was going to knock over the shrimp tower? One person. Thank you.
But Kinski, you killed the poor girl.
Oh, God. Perhaps I overreacted in the heat of the moment. What have I done?
I'm okay! I wasn't even trying to knock over the shrimp tower!
Knock over the shrimp tower?!
Kinski, you've done it again!
Look, we all agreed that the night had to be special. And the thing that made the night special was the shrimp tower. Ergo, we must protect the shrimp tower at all costs. Dubin! You are a professor of logic. Do you detect any error in my thinking?
The man's logic is sound.
Well, if Steuben says he's right.
That is all I'm saying. Now, could I have perhaps handled it better? Sure. But I'm human, which is unfortunate because I wish I were a shrimp.
Good heavens, man, you've got shrimp on the brain!
Kinski, I have something I want to say! I've seen the way you passionately protect the things you love. And if you could love me as much as you love that shrimp tower, well, then I'd be the luckiest girl in Europe.
Well, it looks like Kinski has found a bride. And now let us celebrate by eating a shrimp.
You eat it by the tail?
How am I supposed to eat it? By the head? Ooh.
Kinski, are you okay?
Yeah. You know, in a way I'm relieved. Actually kind of liberating, you know?
That's good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I must say, the night was a complete success.
Indeed. To Kinski, the happiest man in the world.
To Kinski!
To Kinski. What a bizarre sketch. You know, it's difficult to sort of visualize it, but I'm sure you've seen it. It's physical, it's funny, it's I mean, it should be funny, right? It's a sketch. It's on Saturday Night Live. It should be funny. State the obvious, JD. Come on. Listen, next week we've got a great show for you. We are going to be talking with first-timer on the show, but SNL aficionado and SNN personality, James Stevens, will be joining us to talk about one of the first female writers on the show, besides Rosie Schuster. That's Ann Beats. So stay tuned for that one. That's going to be a great one. And, you know, make sure you're subscribed, you share, you rate, review the show. Let me know how you're enjoying it so far. This is it. This is what we got for you. Season 7. And that's what I've got for you this week as well. So if you do me a favor and on your way out, as you walk past the Weekend Update exhibit, turn out the lights, because the SNL Hall of Fame is now closed.
Thanks for listening to the SNL Hall of Fame podcast. Make sure to rate, review, share, and subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on social media at SNLHOF. This is Kirk Lane saying, see you next week.
Podcasts and such.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.